You're listening to a podcast from 702.
So in this hour, I'm hoping that we'll hear his thoughts on the matter. His name is Ethel Trollope. He's the former leader of the opposition in Parliament. Roland Ethel Price Trollope is his name. And we're going to just have a great conversation with him to get to know his life and times. What is he doing now? Where does he think the South African political reality is heading to? Is there a possibility of him going back into politics? He resigned around the same time as people such as Musi Maimane and Herman Mashaba and so forth. At the same time, there was that whole story about cutting off the head of whiteness by, remember that statement by Julius Malema when he was the head of the Nelson Mandela Bay Metropolitan Municipality. I wonder what he feels about those kinds of statements and whether or not perhaps he feels that our politics are heading in the right direction. His name is Roland Ethel Price Trollope, and we're going to be having a conversation as I hang out with this South African straight after this.
Your voice.
Your station. Let's walk the talk.
702.
702.
It's 10 minutes after 10 o'clock, and let me welcome Ethel Trollope to the conversation as we find out who he is, what is he all about, where is he going, and perhaps where did he come from. Ethel, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Good morning, Aubrey, and thank you very much for your time.
So I think it's the second time you and I have spoken, but we spoke in previous time about times about the politics of the day, the issues that were being raised around the politics of the day. Today I want to talk to the man, Ethel Trollope. What is the one thing that you believe is most misunderstood about you, Ethel?
Wow, that's an amazing question, Aubrey. Thank you very much. Look, I've been called all sorts of things. I've been called arrogant. I've been called a bully. I've been called all sorts of things that maybe are a misunderstanding of who I am. I think who I am essentially is I'm very straight, frank, and an honest person, I like to believe. So I tell things the way they are or the way I see them. And what I say is what I do, and often that ruffles some feathers. But it stood me in good stead. People never have to guess where they stand with me. And it stood me in good stead over a long period of time in my life, throughout my life, but also in politics, in various leadership positions. It does, cause some people some discomfort. But I think at the end of the day, I would rather people know exactly where they stood with me than wonder about where they stand with me. So I think frankness and straightforwardness is one of my strengths, but it can be a weakness too, I suppose.
You are, I suppose, best known in South Africa for your political exploits, your political involvement, your community involvement. But Ethel Trollope is also a farmer. You've been in a family that's been in farming for more than five generations. Tell us about that pedigree, that history.
Yeah, I there was a funny story. I was interviewed once by a journalist and they asked me what I wanted to always be. And I said a farmer, but he misunderstood me. And in the article, they said that I wanted to be a fireman. And my children teased me a lot about that. I never wanted to be a fireman. All I really wanted to be was a farmer. And in fact, my introduction into politics came through farming. I spent 20 odd years farming on our family farm. And I always wanted a little bit more than just to be a farmer, like my grandfather, who was also a member of parliament and a very, very good farmer. I wanted to do more. I wanted to serve my community. So I ended up in politics actually through the community service route. I served on various agricultural bodies, ended up on the executive of the Eastern Cape Agricultural Union body for a number of years. And then I was elected in 1995 to the district council, Amatole District Council in Eastern Cape. And then obviously I went into the legislature and then parliament, back to the legislature, and then ultimately ended my political career as a mayor in Nelson Mandela Bay.
So interesting, Ethel, that your response to me went back to politics, right? I thought you were going to say to me, oh, I love to farm cabbages or whatever the case may be, and these are the seeds that you need to go and get, and so forth. So it appears to me that politics is still very much a driver of your thinking. I want to talk a little bit about that, where your political career started, the motivations behind that, your parents being people that were already in politics on an anti-apartheid sort of stance. I really want to hear a little bit more about that, but I do want to hear a bit about the farming and what it's represented in your life. But I know that you also love music, and one of your favorite songs is this one. By Mango Groove, one of Ethel Trollope's favorite songs. Ethel, why? Why is that song favorite?
Oh, thanks so much for playing that, Aubrey. It's a beautiful song. I like it.
We did our research, didn't we? Eh? We checked you out and found out. So tell me why. Why is it such a favorite?
I like it for three reasons. First of all, Claire Johnson and Mango Groove are an iconic South African band, and they've been making really good music for a number of decades now. Secondly, it talks about home talk. I really am a homeboy. I'm a farm boy. I never forget my roots in Mabayami Sekaya, in Yaha. That's where I come from. And then also, it makes you want to dance. That song really makes you want to dance. It puts a lightness in your spirit, and I was just smiling while I was listening to it.
How's your dancing? I was looking at a former colleague of yours dance during the campaign process. I'm talking about the leader of the opposition, the Democratic Alliance, Mr. John Steenhuisen. He could use a little help as far as dancing is concerned. Has that been part of the mentoring process you gave as you led the DA at some point, the dancing?
Look, I gave a lot of mentoring in many fields, but not dancing. I love dancing. I'm not a bad dancer. I've got a bit of a bad knee now, so I can't get down as low as I used to.
Yeah.
But I like dancing. I think it's just it frees your spirit up, and it allows you to relax and be who you are. So, yeah, I love dancing. Music's a really important part of my life. I don't like any specific genre. I just like music that makes me feel happy and light.
Yeah.
And I spend a lot of time traveling, so I listen to a lot of different music, and I think it's good for the soul.
I made the observation just before we played the song that I had asked about your career as a farmer, but somehow the conversation and your response went into politics. I do want to stay a little bit with the farming, because I think the bulk of our conversation will be about your political career, because that's what we know you most for. What did you farm? What does your farming career entail? Your family's been in that business for five generations. Explain to me what that means, five generations. But what did you farm? What does that mean to farm for Ethel?
Yeah, look, we farmed on a really beautiful farm, and my forebears looked after it very well. So to me, conservation is really, really important in farming. You know, land and what grows on the land is an infinite resource, or a finite resource, sorry. So if you don't look after it, there'll be nothing left. So erosion, or combating erosion, was a very strong ethos in our family. My family farmed primarily with livestock, sheep, cattle, and goats. And my family had a long history in agriculture in South Africa. I have a solid silver trophy in my office to this day that one of my forebears, my great-great-grandfather, used to sell bulls and heifers all the way up in Zimbabwe from Bedford in the Eastern Cape. So it used to be a three-month trip. They used to put these animals, show animals, onto an ox wagon, transport them by day, get them off loaded at night, feed them, put them back on the ox wagon. So they were intrepid people. Imagine going to a sale that takes you 3 months to get there, and the marketing involved. So livestock farming was primarily in my genes. That's what I really love. And then I got involved in some game farming. And then in the latter years of my farming career, I had a small irrigation farm where we grew pastures and lucerne and a little bit of maize to feed our livestock. So primarily livestock farming. That's the passion, and horse riding and looking at beautiful animals and looking after animals and showing them at the Rand Easter Show and the Royal Peter Maritzburg Show and all over the country.
To what extent has that process, farming, the connection with the land, the raising of animals, that process of watching something and nurturing something from a certain point to another point, you know, where it matures, to what extent has that been responsible for your political career, your ideas and ideologies around politics and disarmeliving, as it were? To what extent has that played a role?
Aubrey, it defines everything that I am. For example, if you farm with cattle, you might be the best cattle farmer in the world, but if your farm isn't in a good enough position where the cows are in a good, healthy condition, they won't conceive. If they don't conceive, they don't give birth to their young, and you can't progress. So everything in my life is about looking after the primary resource, making sure that it is strong as a base, and then growing whatever you have from there. Same as in politics, making sure that your base is strong and healthy, and that is what your enterprise feeds off. Because if you don't have a strong, solid base, when the droughts come or when the ravages of floods come, whether it's in politics or in agriculture, it takes everything away. So you've got to plan for winter, you've got to plan for summer, and you've got to be very, very meticulous about how you look after your foundation stock and the farm that the stock live on. So that stood me in very good stead throughout my life.
I read somewhere, Ethel, that the first language you learned to speak was isiXhosa. I suppose simultaneously with English, because at home in the family you spoke English with the parents, your the whole family. But the farm and that whole space seems to have been responsible for your understanding of the isiXhosa, the amaXhosa people, the isiXhosa culture. And the reason why I'm sort of focusing on that phase of your life, that part of your life, the farm, the interaction with the land, the people, is that it had a lot to do with your worldview, with the way that you understand the power of language. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Aubrey, I was very fortunate. Some people learn to speak other languages, and I admire people who learn to speak other people's languages. I've learned to speak a couple of other African languages, but the one language that I didn't have to learn, or two of them that I didn't have to learn, was English, my home language, and obviously isiXhosa. And I did speak Xhosa before I spoke English, because I spent most of my time with a lady that was my nanny, who carried me on her back, and eventually her children became my best friends, and I was their best friends, and we had this carefree life growing up on a farm, riding horses, hunting birds and monkeys, and just the most carefree life. With the only friends that I had were the local black kids that were children of the people that worked for my family. And also, ironically and incidentally, one of the worst things that ever happened to me in my public life was that during the election campaign for the 2016 local government elections, some of the competitors went and dredged up or found some of the staff that used to work on our farm. And they made these horrendous allegations of human rights abuses and that they'd been treated badly by me and my forebears. I've never been to court and sued anyone for anything before. And in politics, you know, people say terrible things about you. But that really broke my spirit. It broke my stride. It broke my heart. And I took the two people to court who made those allegations and won both the court cases against them, because it was just fundamentally a manipulation. I grew up, and one of the lessons that I learned from my father and my grandfather and my mother and, you know, everyone that I lived with, was that you must treat people equally and treat people the way you'd like to be treated. We had the most extraordinary relationships with our workers on our farm and also the whole community of Bedford. I'm going there this weekend again because I'm always drawn back home. And I will encounter people there of all persuasions and all races, and they'll be happy to see me, and I'll be extremely happy to see them because they are my community. And when people made fictitious or fallacious allegations about me being a human rights abuser and a racist. It was just too much for me. So I really believe that being able to speak an indigenous language and internalize it and understand the idiom and speak it as my home language makes me African, truly African, and I feel African. And that has opened many doors for me and many hearts for me.
I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate, Ethel. There's a guy who was very, very prominent in South African politics maybe two decades ago, who was also a farmer, a livestock farmer like you are and your family's been, who also spoke of his connection to the land and, you know, the lessons that have been taught to him by the farming process, was a white guy, very prominent guy, spoke fluent Setswana from out of a place called Ventersdorp. You know who I'm talking about, yeah?
Yes, I do, unfortunately. Yeah.
And he too suggested that because of his farming background and him being raised in a way that made him understand the land, that made it, and the fact that he first, the first language he too started to speak was Setswana. Talking about the leader of the Afrikaanse Weerstand Beweging, AWB, Mr. Eugene Terblanche. He too would speak in similar terms about the land, the farming, the livestock, but he turned in another direction. Why do you think that was the case?
Well, I think there's something fundamentally different that defines him and defines me differently. Eugene Terblanche might have loved the land and he might have loved riding horses as I do. I think I ride a horse a bit better than he does because he famously fell off his horse. But I believe that what defines us very differently is that I grew up in an environment where we believed people, all people were equal and that we should treat people equally. And he believed that all people weren't equal and that white people were superior to black people. And that's partly been the curse of this country for many centuries. And it was really reinforced during the period of apartheid. So he believed in that philosophy. I grew up in a family where we believed in a fundamentally different philosophy. And I served my political party for over 25 years, where we believed that this is a country for all South Africans and that there should be no division. And I regret that the for all part in this country that we experienced so brilliantly, but all too briefly under President Nelson Mandela, is becoming a fading memory again in South Africa, where there's polarization of politics and even this proliferation of many new parties that are all community or minority interest-based politics. It doesn't augur well for unity and for creating nationhood. So, yeah. I might have enjoyed many of the things that Eugene Terblanche waxed lyrical about, but fundamentally, I believe in respecting every single human as you should respect yourself, and he didn't.
What was it in your family that espoused those values and ideas of equality, of the respect of all human beings? Where did that come from? I mean, sometimes we caricature the, and unfairly so sometimes, the lives and the way that white people occur in this country, the history of colonialism and imperialism and all of those kinds of things. And clearly in the case of Eugene Terblanche and yourself, there is a fundamental difference in values. Where did the values of equality, of respect come from for your family?
Well, you know, I'm thinking now as you're speaking that Eugene Terblanche might have regarded himself as a God-fearing person, very Calvinistic. I believe my family were God-fearing and I grew up in an Anglican family home. So the church was important. It gives you direction, but also liberalism. You know, espousing liberalism is something that is about an ethos or a value. In the way you think and the way you brought up. And I believe that values are caught, they're not taught. And I followed the example of my parents and my grandparents, and very proudly the history of my forebears, because the history speaks very loudly of where they stood on matters like apartheid. And I am very proud to say that my family and I spent the best part of our lives fighting apartheid, because it was anathema to the way we thought and our ethos as a family.
We continue with this conversation with Ethel Trollope.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Roland Ethel Price Trollope is my guest as we hang out with him, get to find out who he is, what makes him tick, as it were. And we've discovered that he loves Mango Groove, Home Talk. I've done some work behind the scenes to find out what else he enjoys. We'll play some of the other songs that he really enjoys. Let me quickly take a call from James in Midrand. Good evening to you. Good morning to you, James. I'm sorry. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir, and good morning to Arthur as well and the listeners.
Yeah.
I wanted to find out something from Arthur. He's running a program there in the Eastern Cape in Fort Beaufort, his hometown, mentoring citrus farmers, seeing oranges and stuff. And he seems to be doing quite well. He's working with a local chief there called Chief Magoma and a couple of other farmers. And the program is doing very well. I want to find out with him, do we have any plans of enrolling, I mean, expanding the program to other municipal districts? Because at the moment it's there in the Amatole, I think. And second, how would one maybe get a hold of him, criteria to join the program? And because, well, those are areas in the Eastern Cape that are economically depressed areas.
Yeah.
And initiatives like the one he's doing can go a long way in fighting unemployment whilst empowering, local communities.
Indeed.
I'll hold, or should I drop?
Well, do you want to continue to ask a question, James?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, does he plan to enroll it to other municipalities?
All right.
And how can we join? Because I'm here in Gauteng.
All right.
From Fort Beaufort. I'd like to join it, one wants to retire sooner or later.
Okay. All right. James in Midrand. Ethel, the program of empowering, of mentoring farmers, citrus farmers in the Eastern Cape, will it ever grow the footprint? Will it ever come to Gauteng and other parts of the country?
Yeah, Aubrey, thank you. And Tosamile, thanks very much for that question. My political career came to an abrupt end because I regarded myself as a conviction politician, not a career politician. If I was a career politician, I'd still be doing what I was doing 2 years ago. I decided that my conviction was no longer there, and I stepped out of public life. And I started a consultancy business to try and bridge the divide between the public sector and the private sector. They don't work very well together in South Africa. And I had many years of experience in both. And I was contracted by a fruit exporting company to first assist them to help some of those black citrus growers in Fort Beaufort who didn't have title deeds to their property. That was my first engagement. I managed to secure their title deeds for them. And they'd been farming for 30 years. Chief Makoma amongst them had been farming on their farms for 30 years with no title deed, which makes life very, very difficult and commercially impossible to farm effectively. And then we set up a small non-profit company to provide support services to these black citrus growers. And I run that company, and it's been the most unbelievable privilege to work with committed professional black farmers that are successful, that have been farming for 30 years producing citrus. And now they export citrus to all over the world. Last year was a very, very good year for citrus, and those farmers made incredible surpluses, and they had a turnover of close to 100 million rand. So these are essentially some of the very few black farmers in South Africa that have been transformed into commercial enterprises, and I'm very humbled and privileged to be part of playing a role to make sure that they become commercial farmers, and not only commercial farmers, that they become sustainable and to grow their enterprises and improve production and quality of their fruit so that they can capture the very best prices on international markets. So I believe it is a model that can work, and it can be rolled out across the country. I've had extraordinary cooperation from the National Department of Agriculture, the Provincial Department of Agriculture, the Premier in the Eastern Cape, a number of MECs. I know whose doors to knock on, and their doors have been open. And we have been collaborating really well together. So I think it is something that can be done right across the country if you have the right people doing the right things for the right reasons and not wanting to line their pockets. Commercialization of black agriculture can be a reality in South Africa.
Yeah. How do you enter politics as a young man? What were the reasons that got you into politics? And how did it actually happen?
Well, as I said earlier on, community service, and that's a very broad description. But, you know, when I was a young farmer, many of my friends were involved in Roundtable and other community organizations. All I was really interested in was representing farmers. So I was chairman of our Farmers Association, then became a member of organized agriculture at a provincial level. And that essentially opened my door into politics, because I represented a group of farmers and the farming community when I was first elected in 1995 onto the Amatole District Municipality. And there I was a member of the executive committee. I was not a member of the ANC. I was the only non-ANC member of the executive committee. And what I loved about that time was that obviously it was early days in local government, and the ANC leaders that were involved had been in exile and had been part of the liberation struggle and had no experience in government. And they invited me onto that executive to bring my knowledge and expertise in farming and to bring that kind of perspective onto the executive. And we collaborated and cooperated really very, very, very well. And I'm sorry to say that over the years, my experience of collaboration and cooperation between political parties got systematically worse. I went from that district municipality to the provincial legislature in Bishu, and there was quite a confrontational style of politics. Mm-hmm. We didn't really collaborate very well. And then in the National Assembly, it wasn't great, even though I did have good relations. And as the leader of the opposition, I had meetings with the president and many other important leaders of the ANC. But my worst experience was at the end of my political service, where I was on the Nelson Mandela Bay Council. And there my experience was sadly horrific.
I want to stop you there because I do want to go into that experience, because I think it was quite seminal, not only in your political career, but in the development of the Nelson Mandela Bay area. And I'm interested to find out how the current political developments after the November 1 elections, how they sit with you and how you view them. But I've just received a wonderful call. A former colleague of yours is on the line, the former leader of the DA, now the leader of the One South Africa movement, Musi Maimane, joins us. Musi, thank you so much for joining us. Your thoughts about your former colleague, Ethel Trollip, and your life and times with him.
Molo, Tata. Good morning to you, Aubrey, and good morning to fellow South Africans. So great to certainly be on. And I just in reflections, I've always been a strong supporter and an admirer of Ethel Trollip. I think that his contribution to South Africa on two fronts, one, his forthrightness. I think you don't get someone who doesn't mince his words. But secondly, his loyalty. Certainly someone that I worked with for an extensive period of time. And even though he was older than me, more experienced than me in politics, he certainly debated with me at an extensive time, but never once did I ever feel a disloyal individual. I felt that he served the cause. I felt that he was a leader who you could count on. And I think that as far as his role in government, you might reflect on it as a difficult part of coalitions, but I certainly do think in that period when he was mayor of Nelson Mandela Bay, in fact, moved up the citizens' rankings to indicate that it was an incredible city. So he's a great South African, and I certainly have had the great privilege of meeting with him. And as a white South African who speaks Xhosa, he certainly could help build the reconciliation project. So,
yeah. Musi, thanks very much for the call, man. Much appreciated. Musi Maimane, former leader of the DA and now, of course, leader of the One South Africa movement. I want to take a quick break, Ethel, delve a little bit more into your political career. but really interested to hear your thoughts about the current political realities that we face, the coalition talks that are taking place, the sweep, the clean sweep of the municipalities here in Gauteng by your former party, the Democratic Alliance, and what all of that means, and which way South Africa is going politically. The idea that the ANC has now come under the 50% mark in terms of its support, at least as far as these particular elections are concerned. Really, really interested to hear your thoughts about these developments straight after the break.
Let's walk the talk.
702.
Hanging out with Ethel Trollope, former DA federal chairperson, just had a call from Musi Maimane, who used to be the leader of the Democratic Alliance, a farmer, a politician, a businessman, a doting father is Ethel Trollope. And believe it or not, Roland Trollope, his son, has just called in. Roland, good evening to you. Good morning to you. Sorry, Roland. Good morning to you. Your thoughts about your dad. Give us some of the tea, man. What's going on? What kind of dad is your dad?
Give us a tea. So I guess it's quite a loaded question. A doting father. He's been a great dad to me all my life. And as you said, grew up on a farm, which is, you know, an awesome way to spend your childhood. And I went to boarding school quite early, just to, you know, the closest sort of school was a little far away, so I was at boarding school from grade one, but always got to come back on the weekends and spend time with family and my dad. And obviously ended up getting into politics at somewhere along the line, while we were living on the farm, and obviously juggling those two jobs, two very labor intensive, stressful jobs, meant that he was often quite busy and all of that. But you know, I was at school and most of the time at boarding school, and then, you know, we always got to spend time together on the weekends playing golf, you know.
What is the one thing that you believe people should know about your dad that we don't know about him? A particular characteristic, favorite thing? What is that one thing that is uniquely Ethel Trollope that Roland Trollope is willing to tell us about?
He's obviously a leader. You know, he's a leader of men. He's a very charismatic person. I don't think that's much of a secret. But he does care deeply. He cares deeply for, you know, what he's passionate about. And, he throws his all into whatever he does.
Yeah.
And, it just shows his track record of, you know, whether he was on the farm or, you know, working his way up from the ground up in politics, you know, whatever he did, whether he was mayor of PE, whatever he did, he really does give his all, and he's incredibly passionate and caring. And he can be a little bit harsh every now and then, but it definitely gets the best out of people, whether it's people he works for or people that work for him or his family, whatever it is. But you always know that, you know, he does care about you and getting the best out of people. Yeah. And that's
the one thing that you believe as a son you've learned from your father that carries you, that has defined your character to be the kind of man that you want to be, the one thing that you've learned from him?
I would say his work ethic. I don't know too many people that that work as hard as he does. He really does burn the candle at both ends, no matter what he's putting his mind to, no matter what job he's working at the time. And I wouldn't say I've learned it just yet. I'm still doing my best to sort of keep up with that kind of work ethic, because it really does stand head and shoulders above anyone else I really know.
Roland Trollope, thank you so much for joining us, man. I really appreciate you calling in and talking to us.
No problem at all.
Much appreciated. Yeah, Ethel, your son carries your name, Roland. Was that deliberate?
Yeah, very much so. My grandfather was also Roland Athol Price Trollope, and he and I were both called Athol. So when my son was born, my first child, I wanted him to be Roland as well, and he carries my dad's name as his second name, Douglas. But we wanted to call him Roland because Roland's a very powerful name, and I'm happy that I have a son named Roland that's called Roland.
Let's talk a little bit about politics. You entered the politics as a young man. You joined the Progressive Federal Party, which later became the Democratic Party, which later became the Democratic Alliance. You worked yourself through that process until you reached the heights of that particular political party as a DA federal chairperson. Is the DA still on the same trajectory? Some people may argue that they've done very well, surprisingly so, in these elections without their own permission. Is the DA on the right trajectory? What do you think about it, given the fact that they've won all of these huge metros in questionable situations, in questionable circumstances? But what are your thoughts about the DA and South African politics at the moment?
Aubrey, thanks very much. I think it would be unfair of me not to just make mention of your caller that called in now. I think it was a setup with my son. I do want to just say that my family had to make extraordinary sacrifices for me to be able to do what I've done in politics. And my son grew up with me being absent from home a lot. And I'm sure that that has influenced him in a way, because I had to give up a lot of family time to be involved in politics. And I appreciate all the support that I got from my children and my family to be able to do that. But there is an opportunity cost, and I missed a lot of my son's growing up. And I appreciate his sentiments expressed on the radio today. It's very heartwarming for a parent to hear that from a child. But I just want to say about your question, Aubrey, I think the DA and all the other mainstream political parties will have to do some honest introspection if they are to survive. If they don't do that, they'll become extinct. In this last election, more South Africans didn't vote than those that did vote. And the mainstream political parties went backwards quite significantly. Now, you had Musi on the line just now, and you'll remember that when he stepped down as the leader of the DA, there was a lot of pressure on him to step down because we'd had a less than successful election in 2019. And it precipitated something new in our party, the Democratic Alliance, at that time, where people said, all right, it's the first election since 1994 that we've gone backwards. Therefore, the leader must take responsibility, fall on his sword and leave.
Yeah.
And it was completely unambiguous. There was a review panel, and the review panel said that Musi must take responsibility. The DA had a really less than spectacular election this time around, and got significantly less support than they did in 2016 in the local government election. But, you know, politicians have a way of spinning things and making it sound very successful in a great election that wasn't. And if the DA doesn't do some proper introspection, they too will become extinct, like the ANC. Because there's a new phenomenon in politics in South Africa. There's always been distrust in South African politics because of apartheid and colonialism, and distrust between black and white people, and people distrust politicians for a whole host of reasons and political parties. If you're an ANC member, you're an ANC member for life. And if you're this member, you're a member for life. Those days are gone in politics. Pragmatism is the new thing. People want service delivery, and they want it now, and they want it to be done properly. So there's a new thing where people just dislike politicians and dislike political parties because big egos in political parties have become more important than issues. And if political parties don't get rid of that label and start serving the people and stop serving themselves, they will become extinct. And I think that this was a cautionary election for all the mainstream political parties. And you've seen a proliferation of smaller minority-based political parties, interest group political parties that further fragment the idea of a united South Africa where a political party can be a home for all South Africans. And that's the thing that really drives me in politics. I want to be part of a political movement and environment where black and white South Africans and colored South Africans and Indian South Africans and people of Chinese extraction all feel that they are South Africans without any kind of second-rate status, and that our constitution is foremost and sacrosanct, and that together we can make this country work. That's the kind of political environment ideally I would like to be involved in.
Will you make a political comeback?
You know, Aubrey, I've enjoyed the 2 years out of politics, but I've famously or infamously always said that whether you're interested in politics or not, politics is interested in you. And politics is interested in me because politics defines what kind of country you live in, what tax you pay, what kind of government you have. And I'm not an observer. I really don't like being an observer on the sidelines of politics. And as my son said, I'm passionate about politics. And my passion hasn't died. In fact, my passion has been reignited in this election because of the fact that more than half of South Africans didn't even bother to go and vote.
Ethel, I've got to stop you there. We've completely run out of time. There's so much more I would have wanted to discuss with you. But thank you very much for your time and making yourself available, letting us know you a little bit better. So much gratitude from my side. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Aubrey.
All right.